Languaging. The language that we use in our classes is an important therapeutic skill and part of creating a safe container for our students. As yoga teachers, we are in a position of power whether we want to be or not. And the language we use and the energy we embody can either welcome others to the practice and uplift them, or it can ultimately do harm and increase feelings of shame, body dissatisfaction, and displacement. The words we use and the tone of our voice are so important when we're teaching yoga. Students with depression, anxiety, or a history of trauma may be particularly sensitive to this. Core beliefs of depression and anxiety often include not feeling good enough or not being likable, so students may be hypervigilant to cues that confirm this bias. And if we're not mindful, they may have these biases unwittingly confirmed in your yoga class. A trauma survivor may feel unsafe in the world and is unlikely to feel comfortable or relaxed in your class unless they feel safe in your presence and in the class in general. They need to know that they can trust you. A skillful yoga teacher will speak in ways that are invitational, inclusive, non-judgmental, accurate, fostering connection, and encouraging curiosity. Let's start with using invitational language. By inviting students to try a pose or a practice rather than telling them to do it or asking them to do it for your benefit, you encourage agency, self-empowerment, and self-acceptance. Many people who are depressed or anxious feel disempowered in their lives, especially if they've experienced trauma. By encouraging your students to make choices about their own yoga practice, they have the opportunity for the felt experience of having agency and power in the world. While it can feel a little cumbersome to begin with, when I've used this language with my students, their feedback has been that of delight. They tell me they feel more empowered in the class and feel more accepted for themselves, just as they are. Instead of telling your students what to do, like lift your arms above your head, you could say instead, try lifting your arms above your head and see how it feels. Or you might like to lift your arms above your head. Or, and perhaps lifting your arms. Or experiment with lifting your arms. Or as you're ready, begin to lift the arms overhead. Or even, if you like, lift your arms up above your head. Can you hear the difference? Instead of saying, lift your arms for me, just leave out the me. You could say, lift your arms if it feels good for you, or try lifting your arms, or alternatively, place them on your hips, whatever feels best in your body in this moment. There's no right or wrong way of doing any of this. We don't want our students to do their practice for us. We want to encourage them to tune into their body and do what's right for them. We want to counteract a culture of handing our power over to the professionals and people in positions of power and subtly empower our students to listen to their own needs and take wise and effective action based on that. Additionally, students with a history of trauma may have had their personal power taken from them, and we don't want to play in this by asking them to do things with their body for us. It's subtle, but it can make a world of difference. Instead of saying, I want you to, you might say, you might like to. Again, this is about the locus of control coming from the student, not from you. Instead of saying, now inhale, and you could say, on your next inhale, or when your next inhalation arrives. This comes back to what we were talking about earlier with the intrapersonal rhythms, encouraging our students to tune into their own internal rhythm of the breath and practice in accordance with that. Now, there may be a time for sure when we want to be a little bit more directive with the breath, like we talked about in the interpersonal rhythms, but I encourage you to experiment with this kind of invitational language with the breath in your class. Instead of saying, trust me, I'm a yoga teacher, you might say, Try this out for yourself and see if it works for you. If it doesn't, just throw it away. So we want to encourage our students to try things out for themselves and come to their own conclusions rather than taking what we're saying as an absolute truth. To me, this is really what is so beautiful about yoga. Yoga doesn't say, this is how it is and you have to believe me. Yoga says, why don't you try this out and see how it fits for you? I love that about yoga. I think it's really empowering and authentic. And it also helps to avoid abuse from gurus and teachers who portray themselves as all-knowing and wise. Instead of saying, we don't need props, the only prop you need is your mind, this is actually what one of my teachers used to say to me years ago. We could say, feel free to grab a prop to feel really comfortable and supported in this pose. Let's take a look now at inclusive and non-judgmental language. I wholeheartedly encourage you to develop an attitude of welcoming, non-judgment and acceptance, to use language that is body positive, communicates that everyone and everybody is welcome, and that all variations of the poses are equal. So the advanced postures are not intrinsically better. So instead of saying, this is the proper way to do the pose while demonstrating the most advanced gymnastic version of the pose. But if you can't do it, you can do this easier version. Instead, you might say, so here are three different variations of the pose. Do the one that feels right in your body in this moment. There's no right or wrong way of doing any of it. Just because one version seems more difficult than the others, it doesn't mean that it's the best version. Choose the version that suits your intention for your practice today and what you're needing in this moment. Instead of saying, that's the wrong way of doing the pose, perhaps directed loudly at a student across the room, you could say nothing. It might be the perfect pose for them. Or if it's unsafe or they're looking for support, you could say, you might feel more stable in the pose if you try it like this, you know, standing near the student as you're speaking and speaking discreetly. Instead of saying, you need to lose weight, just don't say it. There's no need to comment on a student's weight. Instead of saying, this will give you a six-pack in time for summer when you're in Navasana or some other pose. If you need to say anything at all, you could say, this may strengthen your core, or notice the sensation in the core muscles as you do this. Focus on how the pose feels in the body and what the body can do rather than what it looks like. Instead of saying, okay, ladies, or okay, guys, try saying, okay, everyone, don't presume you know someone's gender identity just by looking at them. Instead of saying, don't cry, it's okay. When you say don't cry, it's okay when a student cries in class, and students will inevitably cry in class, especially when you're creating a safe and supportive space, what you're essentially doing is saying that it's not okay to cry here. You're trying to shut the crying down, usually from a good place, as you want them to be happy, but you're communicating that crying isn't welcome here. You can simply smile warmly and communicate with your body language that they're welcome to cry and you're here to support them. Or you could say, tears are welcome here. Let me know if there's anything I can do for you. Instead of saying, you look like an old woman in this pose, to an inflexible student, just don't say it. It's sexist and ageist to start with. And even if it's said lovingly, it's judgmental and unnecessary. So perhaps you're teaching a class and you've been offering loads of variations to suit the varying needs of your students. And then you come to a pose that you think is easy and you think everyone should be able to do it. And you say, this is easy, everyone should be able to do it. But just because you think it's easy, it doesn't mean that it's physically or emotionally easy for your students. It might be really difficult for them and they're left feeling hopeless that they can't do the easy pose. All right, curiosity. I love this one. Encourage your students to be curious about their experience rather than telling them what to do or what to feel. This encourages self-inquiry, getting to know yourself just as you are, and distress tolerance, the ability to tolerate uncomfortable emotional and physical states. Many individuals, including those experiencing depression and anxiety, find it difficult to tolerate their internal experience and maybe suppressing or trying to get rid of their emotional experience. Encouraging our students to be curious of their internal experience gently helps them to notice rather than suppress or change their internal experience, which is really important in cultivating mental health. We do need to be careful about encouraging students experiencing heightened states of arousal to stay with an emotion they're experiencing. This is really best done one-to-one with an experienced therapist. But as yoga teachers, we can plant the seeds for this by inviting our students to be curious of their internal experience. In addition, when we tell a student how they should feel in a pose, especially if it's a very positive experience, students can feel like they're doing the pose incorrectly or having the wrong response to the pose and feel disconnected and shut down. Instead of saying, do this, we could try saying, explore this, or inquire into what happens when you do this, or what would it feel like if you, or experiment with, or notice what happens when you, or feel what arises within you when, or I wonder what would happen if. Can you feel the invitation to be curious in this kind of language? Instead of saying, you should feel strong and powerful in this pose, try saying, notice how you feel in this pose. Like I said before, we don't want to tell our students how they should feel. Just because you feel a certain way in a pose, it doesn't mean that your students are feeling like that. And suggesting that they should feel a certain way is not honoring them and where they are in that moment, and it can lead to them feeling wrong, disconnected, and shut down. Instead of saying, still the mind, which in my experience is a pretty impossible ask for anybody, especially if you have a busy and ruminative mind, which is really common in depression, anxiety, trauma, and stress. Try saying, notice the natural fluctuations of the mind, or perhaps allowing the mind to be exactly as it is. Instead of saying, the fact that you don't want to do it means that you really need to do it. Has anyone else heard that in a yoga class? While there may be a grain of truth in it sometimes, what we're essentially asking our students to do is to override their intuition. Try instead saying, notice if you have any resistance to this pose and check in if the message here is to sit this one out or to try it out and find a way to make it work for you today. This is much more inviting and accepting and encourages curiosity about the resistance rather than telling students to simply override it. How do we know if the resistance to doing a pose is something that needs to be honored or overcome? Only the student can know this for themselves, and we can't presume to know more about what a student needs than they know about themselves. Let's talk about connection now. Connection is a powerful human experience and can be incredibly life-affirming and healing. In your classes, try using language that supports your students to foster connection with themselves, with you, and with others in the class. Connection is fostered when we are invitational, non-judgmental, curious, and inclusive in our languaging. It's fostered when we encourage students to check in with their internal experience. It's fostered when we authentically greet people when they arrive, when we are available to check in with our students before and after class, when we use our students' names, and when we're supportive of all our students, no matter how flexible, strong, or experienced they are. Many people feel uncomfortable when they're singled out, or if they've seen you single out other people and afraid that they might be next. So give your students individual attention, but do it discreetly, not loudly from the other side of the room or in a way that promotes comparison or competition. Let's look at some examples now. Instead of saying, keep going, don't stop, don't give in, you can do it, just one more, try saying, listen with your body and give yourself what you need in this moment. This promotes connection with yourself. Instead of saying, how are you, as a standard greeting without any real interest, try saying, welcome, or how are you going today, with a real interest and taking time to listen to the answer. Instead of saying, put your hand up if you've got an injury today. What is it? You know, in front of the whole class. Try saying, if anyone has an injury, is pregnant, or is just not feeling themselves today, come and have a chat with me before class or let me know in a quiet moment. Instead of saying, hey, you with the blue leggings, stretch your back leg more. Just say nothing. Or if it feels unsafe, you might say, hi, Paula, you might feel more stable in the pose if you try it like this, you know, standing near her and speaking discreetly. Instead of saying, you're my favorite student, try saying, it's such a joy to see you again today. Instead of saying, look at Jane, her handstand is amazing, like loudly to the whole class, try saying, nice one, just quietly to Jane. Instead of saying, who is menstruating, anxious, depressed, or whatever the practice is contraindicated for today, sit this pose out if you are. Instead, try saying, if you're menstruating or anxious or depressed, or if this pose doesn't feel right for you today, you might like to try this pose instead. Tune into your body and give it what it needs in this moment. Instead of saying, if you're inflexible, get a block, try saying, everyone get a block before we start, so you'll have it on hand if you need it during the class. Instead of saying, who can hold this pose the longest? Try saying, there are no gold stars for holding this pose the longest. Hold for as long as feels right for you and then come out of it when you're ready. Instead of saying, just place your foot between your hands, the just gives the impression that it should be easy. Try saying, bringing your foot towards or between your hands, or any other examples of invitational language that we've looked at previously. Instead of saying, your chaturanga is the worst I've seen all week, just don't say it. Please don't. And finally, instead of saying, I can tell you weren't listening to what I've been saying, James, just repeat what you've said again for those who missed it without singling James out. Be accurate. As best you can, be accurate and precise with your language and avoid commenting on areas outside of your area of expertise, so staying within your scope of practice. So instead of saying, breathe into your big toe, try saying, imagine your breath extending down into your big toe. So you can't actually breathe into your big toe. It's physiologically impossible. So let's not confuse our students. We want them to try the practice, not worrying about how to do something that's actually impossible to do. Instead of saying, yoga is a cure for depression and anxiety, try saying, yoga can be helpful for depression and anxiety, especially if it's in conjunction with other support like counseling. Instead of saying, this practice alleviates anxiety immediately, try saying, some people find this practice can be helpful to reduce anxiety. Perhaps you'd like to try it and see if it's helpful for you. Instead of saying, all yogis should be vegetarian, we might say, ahimsa means non-harming and relates to the way we engage with ourselves, others, and the world. It's up to each of us to determine what this means for us. Instead of saying, you shouldn't take antidepressant medication. Instead, just don't offer advice about medication unless you're trained in this area. If a student asks you directly, you might say something like, I've heard that antidepressant medication can be helpful for some people some of the time. Perhaps you could have a chat with your psychologist or your GP if it's a good option for you. Let me know if you need a recommendation. I'd be happy to give you some names of doctors and therapists I've heard are great. And finally, instead of saying, you should always let yourself feel your feelings, otherwise you're just blocking and suppressing them, and that's not good. Try saying, feeling your emotions when they arise is a powerful way to engage with your internal world, but only as long or as much as it feels safe. Go gently with this. There's no rush, and you have a whole lifetime ahead of you to feel your emotions. Feeling your emotions can be great work to do with an experienced therapist. Let me know if you need a recommendation. I'd be happy to give you some names of therapists I've heard that are great. Okay, thank you so much for joining me for this languaging lecture. I hope that you find some ways to gradually tweak your languaging and your teaching. I suggest taking one of the suggestions and bring it into your class. Try it out for size, see how it feels, see how your students respond, and then adapt it to make it work for you. And when that starts to feel natural, bring another suggestion in. There's no rush. Take all the time you need. Bring the quality of curiosity into this as you integrate it into your teaching. I'll see you over in the next video.